Welcome, everybody, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast brought to you by Mountain Ops. Mountain Ops is a supplement company that specializes in the needs of the hunter. If you need a little more protein in your diet, boom, hit up the Magnum. Three different sources of protein in there, so it absorbs in your body at different points in time, making it last longer so you can get stronger. You can also check out their Yeti pre-workout, perfect for hitting max lifts, PRs, getting your head in the game, and getting after it. They also have Enduro for those of you who are a little more cardio-based in your workouts, looking to charge hard for long hours at a time. The podcast is also brought to you today by Alaskan Guide Creations, the originators and innovators when it comes to bino harnesses. They're the guys to do it first and do it better, frankly, than everybody else out there. If you're going to dump a bunch of money into getting fantastic, great, expensive binoculars, well, then you better, you know, spend a little bit to protect those. They're super reasonably priced. They come in great camo patterns, and they're a fantastic product. They strap it to your chest, hold them down, fully encased in there, and protect them from all the elements. So check them out. Without further ado, let's fire this puppy up. Welcome to the Natural Born Hunter podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my esteemed co-host, Phil Big Sexy Mendoza. And tonight we have on a hunter who has really been able to transcend barriers that used to exist in hunting that seem to be rapidly being broken down by this one single force of nature. And for those of you who may have never heard of her before, which I'd be surprised about, it is Eva Shockey. Now, do you prefer Eva Shockey or Eva Shockey Brent? Do you like the hyphenated version of your last name better?
That's still a gray area. We haven't really figured that out.
I should have asked that first.
Eva Shockey for work, but in my other life, which is about the other half of my time, it's Eva Brent. So you can, either one I'll answer to.
I like it either way. I'm glad I don't have to make that choice of what to do with my last name.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm Eva Brent, but for all work purposes, I'm Eva Shockey.
Right. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on here.
So you've had a busy couple weeks here. The ATA show.
Yeah, a couple of years. Yep, ATA show, and then I went to Dallas straight from there, and then I came home just a couple of days ago, and I go to SHOT Show in a few days from now. So, doesn't slow down anytime soon.
What's your least favorite part of all that traveling?
The delayed flights, for sure. Being in the airport, I don't even mind traveling because I'm so used to it, but the second that my flights get delayed or canceled and I miss my other flight and it messes up whatever was coming, because we usually schedule ourselves so tightly, it's hard to be late for any, like, late to arrive, and so that is what drives me crazy. And I try to calm myself down, but I'm in the airport and there's, like, smoke coming out of my ears. You'll see me if you see me in the airport, because there will be smoke.
Frazzled? You get a little frazzled?
Yeah, well, I feel bad because there's so many people that are waiting for me to get there. Like, usually we have events or someone's picking me up or I'm supposed to be talking at something or whatever the case may be. And I feel bad, like it's my fault that my flight's delayed, which usually it's not. So far it has not been my fault, but it feels like it.
You have traveler's guilt.
Exactly. You understand.
Oh, yeah. I've been there. Do you have the app for all the airlines you fly on?
Oh, yeah.
Are you a constant app checker? That's what I do a lot of. Like, somehow it will change, and I'll be able to look at that app and be like, oh, yes, I found out 5 seconds earlier. This will totally change my destiny.
Like, I'll know before the other people at the airport know, and I'll be like, oh, our flight's delayed. And they'll look at me like, I just have an app, and I'm really smart, and I know how to check it.
Like, you're the savior of the airplane.
Yeah, or the one that ruins it when they tell them it's delayed.
Don't worry, people. Our new gate is C7. That is where we're heading. Follow me.
So, a couple questions for you. Last week, ATA show, not necessarily a consumer show, right? More of your dealers and industry personnel. We all saw you around the Mountain Ops booth a little bit. It seemed like a pretty hot spot to hang out. But What is your opinion from that type of show to something like more of a – because the Dallas show is more of a consumer show, right?
Yes. The Dallas show is consumer show. I think you have to be part of the Dallas Safari Club You have to have a membership to get in, I believe, or maybe you can get in either way. But yeah, the ATA show, you have to be a dealer. So like generally most of them have bow shops, archery shops of some sort.
Right.
Which I don't know. I like both of them. They're different for sure. When you go to the ATA, you're generally sort of incognito. Like everyone's kind of doing the same thing. Generally, everyone's kind of in the same place, whether you're on a TV show or whether you run a store, whether you work like for Bowtech or something like that. Everyone kind of understands each other's position and like no one really cares. Everyone treats each other the same, which I think is really fun because you don't have to really worry about much and you get to go visit with old friends that you've seen for years and years, especially with a lot of the products and equipment that we use. We've been with them for years. Like my dad, I think, has used Leupold for 22 wow. years or something. So I've essentially grown up in like with the Leupold family in visiting their booth every year. So that's really fun. And then on the flip side, I like going to places like Dallas or other consumer shows because generally it's people I've never met before. And I get to all day long, I get to meet new faces and new people and hear new stories. And that's exciting as well. I enjoy doing both. I don't think I want to do only consumer or only industry. I like kind of mixing it up and going back and forth.
Now, how did you get from Eva Chaki? Anyone notice that?
I don't know. Yeah, I hear you.
I can't hear.
I don't know where it's from. All right, maybe it's on my end. Sorry about that. So, how did you get from where you started out to where you are now? Did you think it'd be like as big as you've become in the industry, or are you just as surprised as say I don't know who else? Yeah, I'm not surprised one bit.
Yeah, I definitely did not intend to be in the position I am in now. I didn't plan for it or see it coming in any way. When I grew up, I didn't really hunt. I went hunting with my dad, but I was a dancer. My mom was a professional dancer, like a ballet jazz dancer, and I was competing in dance and doing every sport on the planet. And I was just busy and I just never really, there was no girls that hunted where I lived and there just really weren't girls a lot that hunted at that point in general. So I didn't hunt till I was a little bit older. And when I started, I actually started for the first time with no intention of doing it as a job or on the TV show. I mean, I was on the TV show because that was just what my family did, but it wasn't like I was trying to get a place on the show. I was just going hunting with my dad to try to test it out. And then I actually remember the first year when I went hunting, after that, when we were going to the shows, like to SHOT Show and ATA Show, I was so nervous thinking that all these people that I knew already in the industry, but they knew me not as a hunter, I was thinking they were going to see me at the show and be like, oh my gosh, like you're just trying to be like your dad. And I was so scared to go to the shows. And I remember going to the show like the first year after my first hunt, and people were so excited and they were so supportive and so genuinely happy that I decided to start hunting. And I just remember being like, well, I already love the people in the industry and the industry itself. But after that, when they kind of welcomed me being like, this is so great that you are trying hunting. Hunting's so great. It's such a positive thing. I was just so excited. And then from there, it sort of snowballed in the last few years.
It's just been like, we've been waiting for you. Finally, you've come to this side.
I mean, everyone in the industry just kind of on the same page that family is important, being outdoors is important. I mean, obviously hunters want other people to like hunting, so it was more like that. They were happy for my family that my dad and I got to spend time out in the woods together.
That's something I've thought about recently because I'm having my first child and we just found out what the sex is the other day, and I was like, all right, boy or girl? And I'm like, well, if it's a girl, they're going to do all the same things that I would do with a boy. You know, I'd still take them hunting. And I was like, that is why Eva Chaki is so important, because if I have a girl, this is the girl who I would like them to kind of emulate. You know, I'd be like, no, not the Kardashians. That's not who we want you watching, you know. And that's when I was like, that is exactly why she is so important to this industry. Is to have someone younger who you can, you know, point other people towards and be like, you know, this is a great way to do it right here.
I appreciate that. And I take that compliment very seriously. I think that's a really wonderful thing to feel like someone else thinks about me. But there's a lot of girls now in the industry that are so wonderful for hunting. And it's so cool. I definitely am part of this group of girls that are I think, promoting hunting on a bigger scale than ever before, but I'm not the first by any means. I came in and I know that, like, Tiffany Lukoski was a great role model for me, and I'm Canadian, so we didn't even have Outdoor Channel growing up because you don't have it in Canada. So I was kind of came in blindly, and I actually, before I even knew of their show, of Lee and Tiffany's show, I met them at the show. So I knew them personally before I knew what they did. And just from knowing them personally, she sort of inspired me. I was already hunting, but she kind of made me feel like, okay, girl hunters are cool. It's okay to be a girl hunter. And that was the first step. And then from there, it just kind of turned into, the more I learned about it and the more I started doing it, the more I started realizing how great it was. I'm like, why can't girls do this? Like, why are there not more girls out there that do exactly what I'm doing now? And I'm glad I did, because I think people did. You're right. People needed that. And me and a few other girls have all sort of figured out the same thing at the same time and have kind of built up from there.
Well, it's really the mainstreaming of it too. You know, I saw you on Fox Business, and I thought, when I'm watching the interview, is she really sounds smarter than everyone interviewing her. You know, there's one guy there, he says, oh yeah, all my friends hunt, they get really inebriated, and they quick go to your face, and you just have that face of like, oh bro, why'd you have to go there? And and you handled it really well. Like, you know, that's kind of a derogatory term. Like,
exactly, and that's exactly what I was sitting there thinking, and I definitely wouldn't say I'm smarter than them, but I would say I'm more versed in the world of hunting and the truth about what hunting is and who hunters are. And so when I heard him say that, and to be fair, he was filling in. It wasn't like he wasn't super familiar with the process of like what not to say about hunting. But when he said that, I had some things I wanted to say about hunting, but instead of making those points and trying to teach people about hunting with that short segment that I had, I instead kind of went back on what he said to make sure people know, like, we don't get drunk when we're hunting. That's like the biggest no-no of hunting in general. Like, I don't want people to think I just brushed by that and went and started talking about what I wanted to talk about, because that's an important thing. And people, that's horrible for other people to think that I condone that in any way, because that's exactly what I'm trying to fight and try to get people to not think about.
So as far as those kind of interviews and what the position that you've really grown into, right? Because like you said, maybe not intentionally what you sought out to do, but being a spokesperson for hunters and women hunters, did you get the education from your family and your dad? Is it something that you said, well, I'm getting into this, I really need to make sure I'm studied up and I'm familiar with the facts? How did that evolve? Was it always part of your lifestyle with your family, or is it something that you really kind of stepped up to the plate and owned it and said, I'm gonna take this on and you know, own this position or this place that you're, this platform maybe is a better word for it. And because you are very educated when you talk, and when I've heard you in other places talking, and it's like you said, it's not Bubba talking about buddies and drinking and that kind of stuff. It's very thought out and you know, fact-based.
Well, thank you. That's definitely how I'm trying to come across, so I'm glad that at least for a couple of people that's what they think.
You got us fooled. You got us fooled.
Make it till you make it. I would say it's a bit of a combination, I guess. I grew up, the questions that they're asking me, I mean, they're so common sense to me, the answers are just like duh, we hunt because hunting's awesome. Like, it's hunting so great, it's wild game, it's organic, it's free range, it's out with your family. I mean those things I could say in my sleep, because that is how I've been brought up. It's just my whole entire life, it's my heart and soul, is that's what I believe. More specific fine-tuned details of the interviews, I've had help from the people at Outdoor Channel. Like, they'll say, like, Fox News requests an interview with you, and they have a really wonderful, amazing lady named Nancy who works there who does their PR stuff. And she'll just say, like, if they ask you about a certain thing, try to kind of say, like, I can't comment on that. Like, certain things like that. So if they ask me, being who I am just naturally, I'd want to go talk about it. And she's like, that's probably something we should not talk about in, like, on live news. And so stuff like that, I mean, I get a little bit of help from them, but I would say it's really just who I am, and I think that's probably why they have asked me, I'm very grateful that they've asked me to go on there for those interviews, but I think that's probably why, because I think I reach a bit of a different audience than a lot of other people might reach, and then it kind of broadens the demographic a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I do own a shop. I mean, going back to the ATA show, that I started going there because I own an archery shop in Denver, and meeting some of the people in the industry and competing as in archery tournaments, it's something that's my that's where I come from, and seeing lady shooters, new lady women come into the sport and want to grow, and it's a great crowd, and it's good to see the women, the growth within, you know, that community, because we see the kids filter through and parents bring their kids through, but when to have a mom or a girlfriend or a wife, you know, step outside of her comfort zone and say, yeah, this is something I want to try, you know, they realize quickly that they enjoy it, but it's something that, yeah, you do speak to a different audience, and being genuine about, you know, how you answer things, I think from a social media's perspective, I think that's why, you know, your followers are just so loyal to you and so through the roof, because it's a very genuine answer when you speak. So
we try to obviously portray the truth. That's, we try to portray what we believe, but my dad and I have, through social media especially, people constantly are like, they don't run their own pages, they have someone posting for them, they have someone like this, and that's not true. We don't. Like, I do it myself, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to do that, and it would be easier to just go hire somebody and get them to go do my, like, run my pages for me as far as time-wise goes, but, like, that's the whole purpose of why I built these pages up to what I have, is so that I have people that I can talk to, and I can spread the words about hunting and whatever else I feel like talking about that day, but mostly hunting. Like, I can spread it to them, and they'll know it's me behind the computer. And yeah, maybe they're not going to see me face to face, but avenues like Outdoor Channel and like Fox News, there are other venues that I can get out there, and it feels a little bit more like they're like, oh, I follow her, we're friends on Facebook, so I can relate to that interview she did. And I think they all kind of interlink, and it's nice to have a lot of different platforms, and the more platforms, not only myself but other people, get podcasts like this one, and if other people do interviews and start YouTube channels and blogs and whatever about hunting, it's just, I think it's good. As long as they're portraying hunters in a positive way, I think it's a great thing.
So you may not, I don't know if Will told you, we interviewed your brother on a recent podcast, and not on the air, but he shared some dirt on you. So here's your opportunity to give us an embarrassing story, whether it was a hunting story or something with the family. You know, throw some fuel on the fire here. Let's talk family a little bit. Throw Braylon under the bus once or twice.
And actually, Will didn't tell me, and then my brother didn't tell me he was on the podcast either, because when I heard about this, I had heard of the podcast, but I'm so busy, I was like, which one is that again? And I looked it up, and the first interview I see is Braylon Shockey. I'm like, what the? So then I listened to it, and I texted him, and I said, hey, I listened to your podcast. He was like, why? I don't know, because I'm your sister, and like, that's what family does. He's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I don't know if he thought I was like trying to ask him. I don't know. And although I listened to the whole thing, and I didn't hear a single mention of his sister, like, and now we're already bringing him up, and it's been 10 minutes. I think we should wait till the end.
I agree. I don't know what Phil's doing.
Hey, I just wanted to see if we can get any like brother, sister, you know, some battling a little bit, or.
You know what I really want to ask you about? This is Phil goes, do you have any questions? And I was like, you know, I don't really write questions anymore. I just kind of go with it. But there is one thing I want to ask her about. Growing up, your brother's writing acoustic love songs, right, and going out and performing them. Was he any good at that?
Okay, so this isn't really dirt on my brother, because it's just who my brother is, and he will agree to it. So my dad and I are very, like, outgoing, and we like to talk a lot. We talk way too much, and we probably talk about stuff that has no meaning, really. Whereas my brother is someone that he's more, like, I don't want to say introverted, but, like, he's just quieter, and he likes his own space, and he's very intellectual, and he doesn't talk a lot, and when he does, it's important. Like, it's something you need to hear versus my dad and I. And so he was always quieter and, like, kind of shy growing up, and I had all like the sports and all that kind of stuff, and he went into his room one year in, like, I don't know, when he was maybe a senior or something in high school, and he came out pretty much a year later with like an amazing guitar skill set. Like he taught himself. It's like exactly what he did with editing and producing TV shows. He just taught himself. He got obsessed with it. And he comes out a year later, knows how to sing, knows how to play amazing acoustic love songs, which obviously I didn't fall for as a sister, but like I was amazed because all these girls, he'd get up on stage and be like, oh, I hope you guys don't mind, but I want to play some love songs. And all the girls in the whole audience would be like, oh my gosh, we love you. And he'd play the songs and he honestly is one of the best guitar players I've ever heard. So that turned into some That's kind cool. of like a backhanded compliment.
No, and he really didn't share any embarrassing stories. I was just trying to get to see if you had any embarrassing stories on the family, but
honestly, we're so different, which is a good thing because we never really fought. We never really went after the same things, and we kind of just, he's so easygoing. If there was two of me, we would have fought because I'm really stubborn. Oh, I see a little head in there. If there's two Evas in the family, it would have been a nightmare, but because he was so nice and friendly and easygoing, and then I was a little more stubborn, we kind of just worked together, and now we're really close, especially now that we're in the same industry.
So now that Phil's done lying to you, I wouldn't do that, by the way. I'd never lie to you. What did you think of the episode with Bran? I thought it was pretty good.
Which episode?
The one with him. I thought we did pretty good with him for a guy who doesn't like to talk.
I'm thinking of his shows. Yeah, you guys actually, you kind of brought him out of his shell. I feel like the first couple of minutes, my husband and I were listening and we were like dying laughing because he doesn't really do stuff like that. Like he doesn't talk a lot in front of people like this kind of thing very often. And so I was excited to hear it. And it was just, even just the first sentence when you guys were like, oh, Bran Lynchocki. He was like, it was like an 8-second pause. And then he goes, hello. And I was like crying, laughing. So I was like, I know that he's like not sure what to do, but you guys ended up, it was a really good podcast. And it was interesting because I don't necessarily ask him all those questions you asked him, so it was cool to listen to it and hear insight that he maybe wouldn't share with me as readily.
I can verify he runs his own page because that's how I got a hold of him. I just made a little comment. A few days later, you wrote back, and then I realized he runs all his own stuff, and it's all the exact same way where you write to him, and then you wait about 3-4 days, and you'll get a response. It's kind of like old school mail.
Yeah. Pretty much, so, although he runs his own Facebook pages and stuff really badly because he's so amazing and talented and he could have like a zillion million people following him because he's like, what he has to offer is just so cool. But he doesn't, see that's the difference in like, I go for the face-to-face, like relatability, talk to people, whereas he's more into impressing them but without his like face out there. Like he's, all these shows he's producing are absolutely unbelievable shows and half the people don't even know his name because he doesn't care. Like he doesn't want to put his name out there, which is props to him because he doesn't really need all the accolades that my dad and I need.
Is that why you're out there chasing the trophies?
Pay attention to me. Yeah.
I understand. You're the younger sibling, you know, just a little bit more of that in you.
I need attention. My poor husband's like, I don't know what I signed up for. I'm like, I need you to pay attention to me all the time.
Oh, I have a wife exactly like that.
Maybe it's just a wife thing.
It could be. It could be. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that as long as it keeps the ships moving smooth.
Yeah, exactly.
So enough about the greatness of Bran, all right? You're pretty great in your own right, you know? What's your favorite thing about hunting?
My two favorite things, and I don't know which one would be the best. Well, I guess favorite would be family because that's what I grew up doing. And that's exactly what hunting is to me, is spending time with my family. And people that I've started hunting with more and more have sort of become family to me. So family or close friends. And then the other thing is the eating the wild game, because I love to cook and I love healthy lifestyles. And I love the fact that when I cook meat, like right now we just had, although I didn't get to eat because it took a little while, now I have to come do the podcast. So everyone else is eating in the other room, but I made like pulled pork, but with elk that I shot in Utah. So they were having pulled elk sandwiches, I guess. And I love the fact that we get to enjoy it all year round from just a one little hunt lasts the whole year.
If you could take anyone hunting with you, who would it be?
Dead or alive?
Let's do one of each, because that's a tough, tricky question.
if it was people that are no longer here, I would bring my two grandpas out hunting, which I used to hunt with them a lot. And then they passed away. And since they passed away, I feel like I've gotten a lot more into it. I mean, I was always into it, but even more so now. And I would love for them to come out with me now versus when they passed away 3 years ago, I guess it was. Just to have another hunt with them, because that was my absolute favorite, was when we were with them. And alive, I don't know if I have someone. I'd want to take someone, and I don't have a specific name in my head, but I'd want to take someone that, not like a hardcore anti-hunter, because I don't think that would work, but someone that thinks they don't like hunting, but they don't necessarily understand it, and they don't understand how good it is and what a great thing it is. So I'd want to take someone like that to show them what it's all about and what actually we do out in the field and how we appreciate the meat and the animal goes to a good place. It goes to our freezers or we donate it or whatever it is. I'd love to have just change one person's mind would make a big difference to me.
I have a very similar story to you where I took salsa dancing classes for a winter, you know, and then the following fall I began hunting. So I knew what it was like to not be a hunter and to dance very well. All right, moderately okay. I can move. I can move a little with the rhythm. So what do you think, as knowing what it was like to not being so into hunting and so into hunting now, what do you think is the one thing people kind of miss about hunting? Like they don't quite pick up on it.
Wait, let me go back a second.
Okay.
Did you know that I was like a competitive salsa dancer?
Yes, I was hoping we could talk a little salsa on the show.
I thought it was just the weirdest coincidence. I'm like, I did the same thing.
That's why I said same story. You think I do no research for the show? Yeah. I just don't write questions. I do a bunch of research.
Randomly chose that random lie. What was the question?
No, that's a fact. I can salsa dance enough. We'll put it that way.
Too bad this is over Skype and we weren't in the same room because I would want you to show me.
Oh, here's something. Here's a great question I also actually wanted to ask, right? First dance as a couple, right, for your wedding. You go out there dancing with your husband. Is he leading you or are you leading him?
He's leading me, but I can't say we did a very, like, talented dance. We just did the whole rock back and forth kind of dance.
All right. So it wasn't like you drilling him for weeks, like, this is how it's going
to
go?
I tried so hard to convince him that we should learn a salsa dance, and he's like a rough tough hockey player and definitely is not into that. So I gave up a couple weeks in and then we just didn't really do anything cool.
Gosh, yeah. My wife tried leading me through the whole dance and it didn't work as well as I was hoping.
If we were trying to salsa dance, that's what it would be, but because that was not what we wanted at our wedding, it was, yeah, just he's actually a really good dancer, which is the coolest part. He's he's a hockey player, he's a hunter, he's a fisherman, like the coolest guy ever. And then on top of that, he is amazing at guitar, like unbelievable singer, like crazy good. And he's, I mean, not as good at dancing as guitar and singing, but he's a really good dancer as well. So I kind of have this like robot husband that I never thought existed, and I got to marry him.
Just one day showed up, you're like, let's go dancing. And he was like, all right, I'll show you how to do this.
Yeah, I got this.
So, back to, I guess, the question. What is it non-hunters don't get, or the one thing you would want to just kind of express to them?
I would want them to know that I think a huge thing is that hunters are the biggest conservationists in the world. We're the single group that raises the most money to help wildlife management and habitat management. And that's something that we as hunters can only do if we can go buy licenses and tag and get that money to go towards, you know, whatever it is in that area that they're putting it towards. And non-hunters or anti-hunters think that by stopping hunters, they're going to save the animals. But really, by stopping hunters, they're going to stop the money going into conservation that we're raising, which is way more than what they're raising. And that's going to stop the animals from thriving like they are now because of the $100. So I think anti-hunters want to stop the hunters, and really all they're doing is hurting the animals. So that would be my biggest thing. I mean, there's obviously, you guys are hunters and probably everyone listening to this is hunters are aware of it, there's a lot more details to go into about that, but like you can bring up facts and numbers and stats and really show them like this is the difference we've made in the last 10 or 20 or 30 years. But just on a general viewpoint, that would be my biggest thing.
I've got something to kind of tie into that. I live here in Colorado. There's some recent news and meetings that are going on. They're considering reintroducing wolves into Colorado. Okay. Yes. Right. So, you know, as a hunter and the people that live here, people that love this state of Colorado and everybody's, you know, of course partial to where they live, but, anytime we talk to anyone in states like Idaho or Wyoming or other states where there is a pretty high wolf population, they say, oh, how bad they've decimated, you know, the herds of elk or moose or whatever the species may be. But what's your take on that whole process with, you know, I mean – I know I have my opinions, and we've been on social media speaking up. There's some petitions going on, and we've shared it. But as far as what's your opinion on reintroducing wolves into a habitat? Because Colorado obviously has one of the largest over-the-counter opportunities for elk hunting, right? If wolves are reintroduced into Colorado, those opportunities will probably begin to go away. Maybe slowly, but they're going to go away, and of course, like you said, money will start to go away, and then people will start to realize, oh, maybe this is a wrong decision. But what's your take on wolves and reintroducing wolves into maybe a habitat that they used to live in, but they haven't been here for many years? Tough subject, I know. Put you on the spot.
Kind of. I mean, I'm not going to go into crazy detail about it, but I would say it's a bad idea, in general. I know I can speak for up in the Yukon where we have a very big wolf issue, and it's just unbelievable the moose and caribou that they take down. And the crazy thing, like, I get the circle of life, I get things need to eat, obviously we eat animals, other animals eat other animals, like that's how life works, and so that's not something that scares me. It's the fact that wolves are one of those animals, they'll kill just to kill. Like, they're essentially like the poachers of hunters. Like, they're the ones that just kill and leave it there because that's not what other animals do. They kill because they want to eat it, and that's what they need to survive on. So as far as that goes, our herds have been affected by it, the ones that I'm familiar with, and I know some of the other states that have tried this introducing wolf thing into their states definitely regret it, at least the people that understand how it works. I don't know. I wouldn't support it. To be fair though, I would listen to the other side just to get some information, like why they're doing it and why they think that's a good idea and how they think that's not possibly going to hurt their elk herds. But at the same time, I think once you introduce them, it's a little too late because they repopulate really quick.
Well, and one of the points that somebody brought up in one of the Facebook threads was, you know, we hunters hunt for 2 to 3 months of the year. Our success rates are, bow hunters maybe are around 10%. Wolf hunt 365 days a year. You know, they don't have a failure rate. They may not kill as many today, but they're going to kill regardless. And, you know, as they grow, like you said, as they populate, their harvests are much greater than ours. And
that's what they do. They don't kill just to eat. They'll kill and leave it there, and then they'll go kill another one and leave that there, something else will come eat it. So I guess essentially their circle life is still happening, but they kill the calves. And I mean, I can't remember. I wrote an article on it a couple of years ago and I can't remember. I wish I had the stat in my head still, but it's all mumbled up and I don't want to get the wrong one. But the number of animals, like moose is what I was writing about, that the wolves kill per year is just astonishing. And it's way, 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 way higher than what hunters are allowed to kill or could kill or would kill.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the sad part, is that all those moose are dying because of one wolf, and then you think about how many wolves there are, and it's just, you start doing the numbers, you're like, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, and moose were introduced to Colorado, I don't know, 20-some years ago, but there's people that, since we've been able to start applying for moose tags, I think on the point system that they have here in Colorado, it's 22 or 24 points where you're maxed out. You've had the maximum amount of points possible. There's some people, a lot of people that have that many and have still not been able to draw a tag. How is, you know, you think about that. those people may not ever draw a tag if those wolves are introduced and they start to you know, put a hurting on that those herds, because it's just, it's upsetting. It is really frustrating. And, you know, to hear that they're, to some extent, they're trying to, reintroduce them based off an endangered species list, you know, and I don't understand all the politics and all what's involved in the process of getting them reintroduced. I know a little bit enough to be dangerous and get upset about it, but it's
about this. I don't like speaking about things, especially not in public forum, unless I'm totally informed, because I hate when people do that about things that I believe strongly in. So I can't speak strongly about this. I can say what I've heard, and same as you, I can be dangerous because it gets me all riled up. Like, I feel all heated up just from you talking about it. But I don't know that I fully understand as much as I should. Although I know that you guys, Americans, bought how many wolves from us? Like 12 or something for like $1 million a piece. And we somehow, and the Canadians got $1 million per wolf. If you want to buy more wolves from us, you guys can just keep buying them. I'll even go trap them for you and bring them to you, and you can pay me $1 million.
Those dumb Americans we are, I tell you. But no, I apologize putting you on the spot, but it's just, you know, to get a hunter's perspective on, you know, what wolves do, I mean, in general. And they do put a hurting on wildlife, you know. So that, yeah, I apologize putting it in the spot, and we can definitely change the subject. But I was reminded of it by talking about money and, you know, conservationism and everything else. So, but anyway, I know Will can change the subject. Will can turn it around here real quick. And
yeah, I got this. Don't you worry, Phil. Okay. I'll save you, big boy.
Appreciate it. There you go. Appreciate it.
If you could go back in time 10 years, and you could give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
If I could go back 10 years, I would probably listen more to my dad about hunting, just in general learning about hunting, because I feel like 10 years ago I was like, I don't need to listen to him. I'm smarter than him. You know, just turned 20, so I was 18. So like 10 to 12 years ago, I was in that stage of like, who needs to listen to my dad, because he's not cool. And I should have, because he's the coolest person ever. And he's so knowledgeable, and everything he does is he's so passionate about it. And I wish I would have sat with him more like how I do now, and like pick his brain and learn about what he's interested in, and learn about all his trips he's going on. I literally used to figure out where he was based on his blog. Like, I would log on to his website. At the time there was no social media, and I would log on to his website, and it would be, he would call in a blog with a sat telephone from everywhere in the world. It was just something he did for years, and he'd call in on a sat telephone to someone who would type it up, I don't know who it was, and leave a message, like a 10-minute message on the person's voicemail or answering machine, and she would type it up, and then I would log on and say, oh, he's in, like, whatever, Africa somewhere, he's in Pakistan, or wherever he was. And it's kind of funny, but I wish I would have paid a little more attention. And I would have tried to get more girls involved with hunting sooner. I don't think I had quite the confidence in myself at that point to really speak out about it. I liked it, but I still fell into the same sort of negative thing as a lot of other people. Like, oh, it's a little weird to hunt as a girl, so I don't really want to tell people about it. I'm just going to do it quietly. And that, I wish I would have been the complete opposite of that, is sort of how I am now.
Was it tough growing up and having your dad be gone, like you say, out in the middle of Pakistan or a lot of different countries when you were growing up?
I've never found it hard, actually, which, I don't know, I guess maybe it's my personality, but I also say if my dad was home a lot more, we would have had serious issues, because we're like the same person and we're very stubborn. And me as a teenager and my dad home would have been like a catastrophe in our family. So it actually worked out really nicely, because, to be honest, he really didn't travel that much when I was growing up. For the first 4 years of my life, he was stay at home because he wrote articles. So he wrote from his desk every day. And then he had a hunting business, but he still was writing a lot. And it wasn't until maybe high school that he really started traveling a lot. But at that point, I was in high school, so I was busy 15 hours a day or whatever it is high school kids do. So it didn't really, it was just at that point onwards. But I loved it, because if anything, I'm the same way now, and I have to make myself not travel so much, because I love traveling. I love being busy, and it's just something my family was used to, and we're very close, but we also understand independence and we understand supporting each other, doing what they want to do. You don't have to be right beside each other to appreciate each other.
Plus, you were smarter than him already, so what would you need him for?
That's when I didn't want to hang out with him.
So outside of your family, who would be the next person or people that were the most influential in, you know, your growth as where you are today?
That's a hard question. Normally, it's just my family that I always kind of say has done that for me.
Well, we've seen your dad on TV since I've seen him since so I feel like I know him. I told Brandon the same thing. It's like, I feel like I know your dad. I've seen him on TV so much. But, you know, so, it, yeah, I can see where you take a lot of inspiration from him. But, that, yeah, that's what I'm curious about. I want to see who else really inspires or motivates you as far as outdoor personalities, or maybe not outdoor person. Maybe it's somebody else that just, you know, outside of the hunting world.
I think I would say there's a handful of outdoor personalities that I've definitely looked at and sort of thought, like, they are very good at what they do, and I like, well, I probably like a lot of things I do, but certain elements of what they do is things that I would like to see myself do or act like or behave like, or I've already discussed them, but Lee and Tiffany, they're great people and they're great hunters and they're a great couple as far as a marriage goes, and I think those things are really important to me. Just the combination of those, they've been great for hunting. They promote it. They're kind to everybody. People like Michael Waddell. I mean, he's in the industry. He's a young guy, but he's been in it for a really long time. And things about him, I think he's obviously very personable. Everyone can go up and talk to him. He's worked really hard to get from, I think he was a cameraman for Bill Jordan originally, for Realtree of some sort. And then he built up from there. And now he's a huge, huge face in the industry. And he's done really well for himself. And again, shown hunters and, like, I mean, we're fun people, and he's a lot different from me, but I always enjoy talking to him. There's a few people like the Mossy Oak family, like, I mean, not the traditional sense of the word family, but the family that started it, but then all the people that work there now that I've known for years and years, they're wonderful people. And I've, even before I was hunting, I knew that I wanted to be in the hunting industry. And I didn't, at the time, I thought I wanted to do marketing or PR or event planning or something like that. Like, I really didn't think I would ever be what I'm doing, which I'm glad I am. But at the time, I thought I would be in it. And that was based on the fact that all these people, like the Mossy Oak people and the people from Loophole and Nosler, and I mean, at the time, Under Armour didn't even really exist. So I wasn't as much aware of them when I was way younger. But those people showed me how positive and supportive the hunting industry is as a whole, and I knew I wanted to just be in the midst of it somewhere, and obviously that worked out. That worked out pretty well.
Was there a moment where you were like, you know what, I think I can make a go of this, I think this is what I'm gonna do?
Well, because I'm in a family business, I went to my dad and I was like, okay, I want to make a go of this. Like, and at the time it wasn't the TV show, it was just, again, I just wanted to be able to pay my rent enough so that I could quit what I was doing. I was nannying at the time, and I was teaching dance at the time, and then I was hunting, and I was trying to balance all three of them, and I was going on hunting trips and leaving the kids that I was nannying with someone else and then coming home, and it was just, it got to the point, I'm like, Dad, I can't do this anymore. I want to be hunting, but unless I can pay my bills with it, I have to keep my job, and I can't do both. And so we created a, within the family business, I was doing event management and public relations for our company for probably 5 years. And I've just recently, about 6 months ago, handed off the last of those roles, because I was still doing all of our, like, booking flights and booking hotels and on top of my hunting schedule. And, like, I did it the whole, because I'm kind of OCD and a control freak, I was like, no one else can do a good enough job at this. And now, thank goodness, we have a girl named Ellie, and she's wonderful. And, but that's, yeah, I mean, that's how I did it. But I much prefer the role I'm in now than I was 5 years ago, where I was booking flights and organizing stuff like that.
You just go to your dad and you're like, you know what, Dad? I think it's time for me to be the star of this show. Maybe it's time you step aside.
It's like a running joke. We go to the shows and, like, sorry, the, like, conventions, like SHOT Show and ATA. And it's so funny because we go there, and there's a lot of girls that go there, and the girls aren't necessarily as interested in, like, my dad as they are in talking to me, which is awesome. Like, that's obviously a great thing. But they'll come up and they'll walk up to him and he'll, like, puff up his chest thinking, like, these people want to talk to him. And they'll go, "Hi, is Eva here?" And he's like, "Ugh." Like, and then he jokes about it because, like, he's like, "I'm so proud," but it's so embarrassing because he's worked 35 years in this industry and I kind of stepped in 5 years ago. And he calls them my little teeny boppers because there's all these little, like, young girls, which I love. I mean, that's why I'm involved. If I could only deal with the girls, I'd still be happy because I want those girls to feel like hunting is so cool. You need to be a hunter and not be embarrassed about it and be proud of it. And that would be, I'd be okay with that.
You know what that's like? It's like he's sitting there at home waiting for a really important phone call. Phone rings, picks it up. "Hey, Mr. Shockey, is Eva home? Can I talk to her?" And he's just like, "Ah, yeah, here you go."
That's the nice thing about a family business, though, because it's all related. So whether he's doing well or I'm doing well or my brother's doing well, I mean, we're all in the same family and we're all so proud of each other. And I don't think my dad's going anywhere anytime soon in the role that he has as TV host. I mean, if anything, he works so hard. All of us are like, we don't want to do that. Like, he spends all year traveling and hosting these shows. And it's amazing that he's still doing it at his age.
Will you ever adopt the red bandana?
I call it a spaghetti napkin. He wears the red one, and I actually wear bandanas mostly because I put them on my hair and stuff, and then sometimes on hunts, if I take them off my hair, they end up on my neck, and we kind of look like twins, which is sort of weird. But I'm not going to go as far as the red one, but you'll see me with the purple one from time to time.
All right, fair enough. Now, aside from hunting, in your downtime, do you have any go-to shows you watch, or what are you into?
Well, yes, because I've never been a TV person. I didn't even have cable really growing up, and I didn't have it in my 20s when I was living by myself, and same with my husband. And then the last 2 years, we've lived in Russia because he's a hockey player, and he was playing in the Russian Hockey League for 2 seasons. So we went to Russia, and all of a sudden didn't have a lot to do in our spare time. If I wasn't traveling for work, I was kind of sitting there in our little apartment, like, and I'm very active and outdoorsy, but it was so cold, you couldn't even really do anything. So we turned to Netflix, and so we're kind of Netflix junkies now. We just started watching one called Making a Murderer.
Which I've heard of it.
All over the place. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet, but yeah, we watch quite a few different shows. We actually watch Outdoor Channel more than anything, though, which is our favorite.
Are you just, like, casually, like, "Hey, there," you know, you know when you're going to be on, and you're like, "Oh, you know, maybe we should watch this show. Just see how I look."
The good thing about my husband is that he doesn't care about that stuff at all. I mean, he was in the NHL for years, and, like, he's been in the limelight, and people know him and give him attention, and he doesn't care about that in his own life, but he definitely doesn't care about it in my life. So if I ever am like, "Oh, look how, like, good I did," or "Look at this," like, he's supportive, but he'll never be one to make my head big or give me, like, be like, "Oh, that's so cool, you're on TV." Like, he'll, like, flick the channel if he sees me. So it kind of keeps me, like, well balanced.
I actually know your husband's team, because in my research, I was like, you know, that sounds really familiar, and that's when I realized, I was like, ah, yes, they play our hometown AHL team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So
which team is your hometown?
Utica Comets.
Oh, yeah, yep. He says Utica sometimes. Yeah, it's a different lifestyle from Russia, that's for sure. But living in Pennsylvania, it's amazing. I absolutely love it.
What's your favorite place you've lived so far?
My home from where I'm from is my favorite, Vancouver Island, Canada. I'm pushing to live there. My husband's from the East Coast and I'm from the West Coast, so we're doing, like, the East Coast versus West Coast gang right now. We're trying to get over to where we both live. We're trying to get a forever home, and we're not sure where to have it. BC, though, is incredible. Especially, they have some of the best hunting, like, anywhere.
let's hear your sales pitch you give him. What's the breakdown? How's it go?
My dad and my mom are there, so that's a big plus. But they have some of the, like, the most species or something, and if you're a BC resident, you can hunt all of them, which is so cool. And you can go up in the mountains and hunt goats and sheep, and you can go up moose and bears and blacktails and whitetails, and, like, everything. BC's just the best.
Now, what is his counterpoints? How does he's from the eastern coast of Canada?
He's from Ontario.
There's not a lot going on. My dad's from Ontario, and I know there's not a lot going on in Ontario.
So I guess I've been told that everyone loves where they're from, even though I think there's nothing really happening in Ontario compared to where I'm from. His argument is he's a big bass fisherman. That's his thing. Like, he loves hunting. He's an archer, but he loves bass fishing. And so Ontario has all these lakes, and he says he goes fishing on them. I don't know. I don't really believe it, though. I think he's going to crack.
There you go. We have lakes in Vancouver. Come on. It's an island. There's got to be stuff out there.
When we were out in BC this summer, he went deep sea fishing with a couple of my friends. And I guess they had a really, really rough day. And even the ones that never get seasick got seasick. So Tim was down for the count, like dead in bed, dying seasick. And he's like, I hate fishing in BC. So it wasn't a very good example of what we have to offer in British Columbia.
Now, what do you think of the rise of the hunter athlete or athletics, or I guess, you know, the fitness movement within hunting?
I love it. I think it's so incredibly good for the sport because it goes back to the old stereotype of like middle-aged, overweight guy, then that's who a hunter is. And now it's cool. I mean, that it can still be that, it can still be anything. But the fact that now athletes are speaking out for hunting, and they're saying like, you, in the truth, it's true what they're doing, because you have to be in shape to go climb Colorado mountains. Like, I've been in Colorado and I consider myself in quite good shape for that kind of thing, and I'm like sucking wind, so I could be in better shape. And that's the cool thing about seeing people go out there and really work hard, like Cameron Haynes. Anyone who's in the hunting industry that's into fitness knows who Cameron Haynes is. He was sort of the first one to really push it. But now there's a lot of other people in Under Armour, for example. They have a women's hunt team. And a big part of our women's hunt team is that, like, we're all fit people. We're all healthy. I mean, not necessarily Cameron Haynes fit. A couple of them are. But, like, just in general, just a healthy lifestyle. And we know that you have to work out and you have to eat right in order to be a successful hunter. And that's just kind of how it is.
Yeah, so where were you at the morning workout with Cam Haynes at the ATA show?
Whoa, how do you know that I skipped that?
Because Phil and I made it.
We were there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cam brought us Waffle House.
Okay, so I'm glad he told everyone I skipped. I did skip because, I don't really have a great reason, but I did skip because I was supposed to go with him, and I thought it was, like, him and a couple of us, like, from Under Armour. And then I go on his Instagram page after I was like, yeah, I'll come. Like, we'll go work out in the morning. And he posted up to his, like, millions of people. And I'm like, well, I don't want to go with a million people working out. Like, I'm going to end up talking about hunting. I want to go work out. Like, I only have 45 minutes before the show starts. So I bailed, and then I should have gone because of some of my friends went. They said there wasn't a million people. There was like 20, and everyone who goes at that hour, it wants to work out. They don't want to talk about hunting anyways. Like, I love talking about hunting, but not if I only have that much time to get in shape in the morning.
We waited till after working out. We talked hunting at Waffle House.
All everyone was saying is, I thought Eva was coming.
Yep, I was.
Actually, Cam didn't rat you out. I just brought that up because I figured, hey, where were you?
Yeah, Cam, well, he was texting me, like, you should have come. You should have been there. So we have a Planet SHOT Show to work out. Although my friend, I'm good friends with Sarah Bomar and Josh, and they were there, and Sarah was like, it was so hard. And I guess because she's also super fit, she was, like, everyone expecting her to keep up with Cam, which she can. But she's like, I could not. Like, I had to, even if I was dying, I would have had to keep up with Cam. So she was like, it was pretty hard.
I was right next to Cam, and when the workout started, he went out of the gate, and I was just like, you know what, I'll just focus on my own thing. I'm not going to try to keep up with that.
Yeah, that would have, I mean, and that's the thing about working out in health and fitness. Like, I'll never be a Cam Haynes. Like, I'm not going to go run 100-mile marathons or whatever he does. I think that's incredible that he does that. But I think the purpose of promoting that is that everyone can do it on their own pace. Like, I work out a certain way, and I consider myself to be in shape for me. But then there's someone next to me that'll work out totally different, and they'll be in shape for them. And it's just feeling healthy and feeling fit and capable of conquering the mountain or conquering the
you're unknown. Is that the saying?
Yeah, exactly.
What's Mountain Hop's phrase? I should know this. Oh, no.
I think I might have just stolen a quote from somewhere.
Yeah, I think the Mountain Hop's tagline is like, conquer your unknown?
Yeah.
Conquer the mountain. Phil, yeah. Are you looking this up?
Yeah.
I just know hashtag I love Mountain Ops. That's all I go with, man. I love Mountain Ops.
That's the other cool thing. So I'm absolutely obsessed with Mountain Ops, like over the moon. I wake up thinking about a smoothie in the morning. Like that's what gets me out of bed. I usually go to work out in the morning, but the thing that gets me there is the fact that I have a smoothie. And Mountain Ops is so cool because it combines, like we're talking about, fitness and hunting into one product. And the group of people that now use it is so cool. I've been using it for a year since I met the guys, Jordan and the other guys from Mountain Ops.
Jordan and Casey.
From, I think I met them at ATA last year, and then I've been using it since then, and now it's like my whole cupboard is filled. And Tim, I have my husband using it as well, because he's always been a big protein guy, like supplement guy, and he started using Mountain Ops instead of the brand he was using, and now half his hockey team's using it, so we're slowly spreading the word through all of Pennsylvania.
There you go, like a virus.
Yeah.
What's your go-to smoothie? What are you putting in there?
Oh, it's pretty green. It's like really green. Like we have a Vitamix and I make a big one and I put in the fridge after, but I'll put, you know, those plastic Costco things of organic spinach. They're like huge.
Yes, I have them.
I'll pull one of those into the smoothie.
The whole thing?
Yeah, the whole thing. Cause once you blend it, it's only like the whole thing goes into like half a Vitamix. And then I put usually a banana and an apple and celery and lemon. And then I put vanilla usually, and it's amazing. And sometimes I'll put like peanut butter or whatever and almond butter, but that's usually, it's like pure green with some protein. It's so good.
You ever use PB2?
Yes, I do. I love PB2.
Have you tried the chocolate one?
Yeah, I have.
Of course you have.
Ones like this in my cupboard right now.
Oh, they're amazing. What's your go-to product then? If you had to pick?
I like the, what's it called, Ammo, the one that goes in the fridge.
Yeah.
Ammo. I can't remember the names because I've been using it for so long. It just always is in my fridge. But I love it because the fact it has to go in the fridge and it has fruits and vegetable servings in it, which is, I've never heard of protein powder that has real fruit and vegetable in it that it means it's healthy for you. So I love that. And I love Blaze and Phoenix, like the pre-workout pill and the muscle recovery pill, because I usually need muscle recovery after I work out. Otherwise, I'm like hobbling along for a week.
And what kind of workouts are you doing?
I do a pretty big combination across the board. I love weights. That's like my favorite one to do, but I don't necessarily do them. I don't weight train throughout the week every week. I'll try to go twice a week and do like heavy weights, and then I'll do couple of the girls, the wives and the hockey team will go work out with a trainer and I'll go do that. And it's more like a CrossFit kind of workout. And then I do, because I was a dancer, I love dance related things. So I'll do, it's called bar class. I don't know if you guys probably don't do it.
Oh, I used to do it all the time.
Well, if you were a salsa dancer, you probably did. But it's amazing because it's not as high intensity, but the muscle groups that you work in it are crazy. Like I get more sore from bar class than I do from my weights, which my husband thinks is really embarrassing, but it's true. It's a hard workout. I love to do spin class. So I'll just sort of flip back and forth between all those things.
All right. And we're running short on time. So one last question for you. If you were to sit down and interview somebody, who would you interview them and what would be the three questions you would ask?
These are questions I've never really thought about before.
That's why we're good at this.
Yeah, but like, I need to think of someone. I would love to talk to someone like Fred Bear or Roosevelt or something like that. Like one of the old hunters that is from a zillion years ago that really started before anything. It was really even a thing back then.
One of the icons.
Yeah, one of the icons that we all hear about. And I'd like to hear what got them into hunting and, like, how they felt about hunting and conservation. And I'm not even familiar with at the time, like, if conservation was really a big thing combined with hunting at that point. Like, what's the name of the Robertson Act that puts the money from the licenses and the tags? Hold on, let me see.
It was Pittman Robertson? Is that
Pittman
it?
Pittman Robertson, yeah. That's
there you go. Sandy Hill Pittman and...
Like, I'd love to know. Yeah. I'd love to talk to the people that were involved with that. I want to interview, like, 100 people because now that you've got me thinking about it, I'd love to interview people like that that really got on board with conservation and how they sort of combined conservation with hunting and how they got got it made into like what it is today. I think that's really incredible.
Well, there you have it. You got anything, Phil?
I seeing some of your work and seeing, you know, your family's work and everything, I'm a fan. So, you know, I appreciate it. You're relatable. The people that come through my shop, a lot of people comment on the Shockeys and you know, and what and from all aspects, you know, from what Brandon's doing to what your dad's done and yourself. So, like I said, it's a pleasure talking with you and meeting you. And excited to see what comes out in the future because, like I said, seeing the growth and seeing, you know, the evolution of, you know, fitness with hunting and women in hunting and all these different aspects and seeing them grow, it's fun. It's fun to just sit back and watch sometimes. So thanks for doing what you do and coming on the show. So I don't have any questions, just thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's nice to talk to you guys. It's nice to have a longer interview, actually get to explain some things and go into more detailed in my normal little 2-minute segments I get to do, like blah, 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 blah. Like I actually get to sit here and enjoy it.
Well, and this is the first young lady we've had on the podcast, Will, is that right?
Yeah.
No, we did
first,
have
long, yeah, first.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, knocked it out of the park. Good job.
Thank you. It was nice to talk to you guys. Anytime you want me on here, I'm happy to come back.
I'll hold you to that.
Not like anytime, but if you
You stop calling me, Will.
Are you busy tomorrow night? Same time.
Bring your husband. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. He's actually super interesting too. I should have brought him in here for part of it because he has a whole other perspective of someone that didn't grow up in the industry or hunting, and he taught himself how to hunt. And he was a hunter when we met. We met at a hunting event in North Carolina, and it's cool. I hear stuff from him, and I grew up just understanding it. That's just what we did in my family, and he grew up. Like no one hunted, no one really liked hunting, and he came from a different world. So it's cool to see both sides.
Hey, hey, come on with you. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much, guys. Have a good night.
All right. This has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Wake up, chase dreams, repeat.